you were expecting the Power Slam theme song, but that's not what you got. It is Cool and the Gang with Celebration, because this is episode 100. I have a bottle of Corona here to celebrate, and I am here, Kenny McIntosh, joined by Finn Martin. Finn, we have made it to 100 episodes. Congratulations.
Made it, my top of the world. That's a Jimmy Cagney line from White Heat, Kenny. But you knew that already.
I knew that already. I'm not that young.
I've got the, Kenny, I've got the Lambrini on ice. I've got it chilling. I'll be up to the bottom of that later.
You know, it's funny, someone did say to me, they said, Jaeger bomb to celebrate. And I thought, oh, that's still a debt that Finlay Martin has not cashed in yet.
Yeah, you're right.
If only there was a WWE pay-per-view on a Friday afternoon that like was a good time that Finn could come up for. I don't know. I don't know when we could do this thing. But Finn, you still need to have this Jaeger bomb at some point. We are not letting you away with this. You have to have it before episode 200. That's the deal.
Well, hopefully it will happen before then.
So there's lots to talk about. We do just want to say, first of all, great news that Ric Flair's surgery has been successful.
Sure,
so
yeah.
He is on the mend, which is good. You know, there was a kind of scary moment where people thought it might be something he might not be able to recover from, but thank God he is. So good news that Ric Flair is on the mend.
Absolutely, yeah, of course, absolutely.
So let's open with Money in the Bank. Obviously, Sondra and I covered it on Patreon, patreon.com/insidetheropes. But what did you think of the show? We've got Brock Lesnar as the sort of surprise Money in the Bank briefcase winner for the men. Big night for Bayley. What were your kind of highs and lows for Money in the Bank?
I mean, there was some good stuff on the show. There was some disappointments, like Brock Lesnar being chosen to win the men's Money in the Bank ladder match. It's like, why not take a chance? If you're not going to take a chance on someone new, you're not going to create any new stars. So by making Lesnar the champ, and he came out right at the end, making Lesnar Money in the Bank winner, and he came out right at the end, didn't even take the bumps or really work the match. I mean, you can understand why people were pissed off, Kenny. You really can't you?
Yeah.
I mean, it just felt like a typical Lesnar phoned in performance. Although, let me just say that I thought Lesnar did enter a sterling performance at WrestleMania, but this was more typical of Lesnar, just turning up and not really being bothered and just taking the glory after everyone else had done the work. It really did feel like a stereotypical Lesnar performance. So it definitely ended the card on a flat note, I felt. I thought the women's Money in the Bank ladder match, which opened the show, I thought that was a really good match. I enjoyed that. Maybe the ending was not as convincing as it could have been, with Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville stood on the top of the ladder. And then suddenly, you know, they went in for a tight shot. And strangely, neither Mandy Rose or Sonya was aware that Bayley was on the other side of the ladder until she stood eye to eye with both of them. That was bizarre, wasn't it, that? Kenny?
Yeah, it was a strange moment. I'm with you though. I thought overall though the women's storyline throughout the night, I thought was a really good thread. And who knew that Bayley was still over?
Well, who knew indeed? And fans were really, I think fans were just so relieved to see somebody who had talent win the match. And I think we'd said in our predictions last week that it was either going to be Ember Moon or Bayley, and they did seem like the only two plausible winners. And it was definitely the right move for Bayley, the right move for WWE to give Bayley this shot. I thought most of the people in the match had a good night. I thought Nikki Cross did really well with doing the helicopter blade spot with the ladder, and then Carmella went backstage with an injury and came back with a knee all wrapped. She was channeling Terry Funk there, Kenny. That was a typical Terry Funk spot, that, which he's used a few times in his career, with rather more success than Carmella did here, I might add, but it was still good to see. So, I mean, I enjoyed that match. I thought that was well done. And as you mentioned, later in the night, Bayley cashed in on Charlotte after Charlotte had beaten Becky Lynch for the SmackDown women's title. That was really good to see as well for Bayley. You know, that she wasn't given this Money in the Bank contract and then failed to cash it in. She came out of this pay-per-view like a double winner, really. So, I mean, it was a great night for her. One thing that I thought was rather unexpected, and I'm sure you noticed this as well, was when Bayley was interviewed by Charlie after the Money in the Bank ladder match, Charlie brought up Sasha Banks. And you think, well, is a Sasha comeback in the works? I thought that was a bit peculiar that her name was brought up.
Well, they brought it up a few times. It wasn't just once. It was she was brought up a couple of times, which maybe led you to believe, are they courting her to come back, or is she actually going to be coming back?
Yeah. So, I mean, that was a bit peculiar there. Yeah. Sorry, Kenny.
No, I mean, yeah, I think the overall, though, the thing is, like, it shows you that, you know, people did have an attachment to Bayley, and, you know, now they have this second chance with her that I didn't think they would have. So I hope that they do. I hope that they do, because she's got such a big fan base. I hope that they handle her better this time.
Yeah, I mean, she mentioned on, was it Raw or SmackDown, where she said that the hugs, she was over the hugs now when she was all about being champion. So it didn't really feel like a big shift in terms of character development. That's what she needs. The character needs to progress. It needs to evolve. It really hasn't since she made her debut. So they really need to come up with a battle plan for her, to come up with a character that's still going to appeal to her existing fan base, but also is going to appeal to the people who do boo her. And there are still boos. There are still people who find a character, which is obviously geared towards children. That's a lot of people out there that find that irritating. So I think they've got to find a way to try and toughen up the character. I think that's something that needs to happen forthwith. Also on the show, I mean, Rey Mysterio defeated Samoa Joe for the US title. They went home early when Samoa Joe's nose was busted. That was catch. Joe was protected on the finish. Rey turned a powerbomb into a Hurricane Rana for the pin, but Joe's left shoulder was up. So Joe was at least protected on the finish when they went home early there. We should mention that Sami Zayn was attacked backstage and hung upside down from a fence. I was trying to work out how someone would be able to do that. Wouldn't be very easy to do that, would it, really?
Almost like you'd need to slip something in their drink so that they're like so passed out that they can't fight back.
But how exactly would you attach them upside down, really high in the air from, well, not high in the air, but off the ground from a fence? You know, that would take some skill. That would take some doing. That was never explained.
You know, you'd need to ask Brock Lesnar.
Well, yeah, I mean, maybe we can add that to a list of like GTV and all those, you know, who drove the Hummer, all those unexplained mysteries.
There you go.
Yeah, I mean, we had the cage match with Shane McMahon versus The Miz. Shane unexpectedly scored the win there. I did not see that coming. That was a heated matchup. What did you think to that, Kenny?
I just thought the whole thing made Miz look like an absolute chump.
Yeah.
And that's the problem with it. You know, one of my fears going into it, I said last week on the overrun about how, you know, what, you know, the match now, I don't really see the point. I mean, look, some of the match was fun, but at the end of it, Miz came out just looking a bit like a chump. So, not a good... I mean, I feel like this is going to be... Miz is now inevitably going to have to turn heel again later on, because his babyface run has kind of just been... He can't beat Shane McMahon. Even if he beats him now, who cares? He could not beat Shane McMahon. He was outsmarted by Shane twice.
Twice. You are absolutely right. No top babyface is ever outsmarted by someone like Shane McMahon twice. And, you know, you look at Shane, it's like, well, why was he booked to win this match? So he can face Roman Reigns at Super Showdown. And we were told that Super Showdown is going to be a pretty good show. What's as good or better than WrestleMania? They said in the voiceover, Super Showdown. And the whole thrust of the promotion for this, it's based around Goldberg versus Undertaker. So it's like another nostalgia match. And we've also got Triple H versus Randy Orton. Who's looking forward to that?
I mean, this is another chapter in their storied rivalry.
Yes. back to Money in the Bank. Becky Lynch and Lacey Evans had a better match than I was expecting. I thought Lacey Evans, I thought she stepped up here. This was her best performance on the main roster to date. I know that's not saying a great deal, but I thought she was solid here for the most part. The finish was a bit weird, where Lacey had Lynch rolled up, and then the referee didn't count, and then Lynch transitioned into the disarmer and Lacey tapped out immediately. And I thought the finish was a bit of a mess there. Perhaps we should pin the blame for that on the referee. It did seem a bit strange. That really kind of flattened out the ending for me. But I mean, overall, it was a decent performance from Evans. And I'm sure she left Money in the Bank feeling greatly heartened that, you know, maybe, you know, she is up to standard. Maybe this is going to be a success. What did you think to the match, Kenny?
I thought yesterday was okay. I mean, look, I think Lacey Evans' performance on Sunday was fine. But look, if that's the level that things are going to be at now, it's not a good sign.
Well, it is
of in-ring, you know. But in saying that, they're trying to build Lacey Evans, so maybe she'll get better. I mean, the thing is, they weren't having house show matches. Why were they not on the road doing house show matches, getting better at stuff? I don't really know. I mean, at least on SmackDown now, we kind of got the Bayley and Charlotte thing going, so that's over there. I just hope that, you know, Lacey's able to step up and do more. I like her. I like the character and I like the story. I just am not blown away by her in the ring.
Oh, no, absolutely not. I mean, all I'm saying is that most of what she did was on time and on target. I mean, she's nowhere near ready for this spot, obviously. But, I mean, this was a decent performance by her. It was certainly not an embarrassment. A lot of what she's done previously has been nowhere near good enough for WWE. It's been Iconics level, you know, and that's about as bad as it gets. So, I mean, I will say that in the Becky Lynch versus Charlotte match, which took place immediately after Lynch had defeated Lacey Evans, I felt that match was a bit of a disappointment. It was as if people didn't really want to see Becky Lynch wrestle again. And also, I should point out that the finish looked really bad. Charlotte hit a big boot that missed by a mile. And that was apparently enough to pin Becky. So another bad finish. That makes it, you know, she had the, obviously somewhat went wrong on the WrestleMania finish. We had something going wrong on the finish with Becky Lynch versus Lacey Evans. And then a really bad boot to the face finish in Charlotte versus Becky Lynch. So, yeah, it was not a great night for Becky Lynch overall, Kenny.
Overall, that was kind of Money in the Bank. I thought it was a decent show overall. I don't think it was anywhere near as bad as some people have been kind of making out to be. I thought it was a decent show. A questionable booking decision, but yeah, and so I guess let's go on to kind of Raw and SmackDown. I don't think they should have given Brock Lesnar the briefcase, but I actually thought what they did on Raw with him was pretty fun. I thought him coming out pretending the Money in the Bank briefcase is a boombox is one of my favourite things in the world. I thought Heyman, for the first time in a while, cut a good promo that was... You know, look, Heyman always cuts good promos, but the first time in a while that it's felt like there was a reason to have a promo from Paul Heyman. And, you know, the Seth Rollins and Kofi Kingston thing, for me, I'm going to tie this in a little bit to the SmackDown thing. I don't think Kofi Kingston's a world champion. I think the experiment is done. You know, I didn't think the match with Kevin Owens at Money in the Bank was that exciting. Him and Dolph Ziggler is certainly not something that's going to excite me. I'm glad that he got the win. I'm glad that he got the WrestleMania moment, but I'm just not in any way excited about a Kofi Kingston title reign, and they've not told any stories yet that make me want to see him keep the belt. But what do you make of this whole, how they handled Brock Lesnar with the briefcase, and he might cash in on either of them, and how that played out on Monday?
Yeah, I mean, as you said, Paul Heyman had he bragged about negotiating Lesnar's Money in the Bank gig as a late replacement. So at least there was a storyline explanation for why Lesnar mysteriously turned up right at the end of the match. So, I mean, that was quite interesting there. As you said, Brock Lesnar was out holding the briefcase as if it was like a stereo. So he looked like he was having a laugh. Of course he was having a laugh. I mean, there he was at Money in the Bank, you know, laughing his ass off. He's probably thinking, yeah, they paid me all this money. I didn't have to do anything. All these other guys took all the bumps. And then he's out there on Raw. He didn't really have to do much on Raw either. Didn't speak at all. Heyman does all his speaking for him. It's, you know, there's a lot you can say about it, Kenny, because Lesnar was out there and then Seth Rollins and Kofi Kingston came out on Raw and basically said they wanted Lesnar to cash in the briefcase on them. And this was something that Heyman emphasized. "You're both auditioning for a match with Brock Lesnar," he said. And it just really felt like the champions were looking up at Lesnar rather than Lesnar was looking up at the champions. So, I mean, you've got what's going on there. That's not the way it should be. You know, it shouldn't be, you know, Lesnar, you know, it shouldn't be a case of the champions want Lesnar to cash in on them. Why would they want him to? I mean, Kofi Kingston said, "Well, I've got to defeat Brock Lesnar in order to be regarded as one of the greatest WWE heavyweight champions of all time." But it's just like, you shouldn't really be saying these things. You should be selling the danger of Brock Lesnar. You should be fearful of him. You should be trying to avoid this match in a babyface way. Obviously, he's a babyface and needs to be courageous, but there's a way of doing this. You shouldn't be inviting Lesnar to cash in. Why would you? So I just thought the whole, it was kind of ass backwards to me, Kenny, the whole layout of it. It just really, again, causes people to resent Lesnar because it's like he's just getting everything that he wants and he's put on a pedestal above everyone else, even though he's a part-timer and only turns up when he can be bothered. So, you know, and also the other thing, what's at the end of the line of all this, Kenny? Brock Lesnar presumably cashing in on Seth Rollins, presumably becoming champion, and then facing we know who, Roman Reigns. So, I mean, long-term, it doesn't fill me with glee.
Well, long-term, it goes one of two ways. It's either him facing Seth or him facing Roman. For me, the issue is that whoever, whatever Lesnar does, and I actually think he's been very entertaining the last couple of days, is that it's not leading to him it's not leading to any fresh opponent being the one to beat him. It's not leading to Finn Balor, it's not leading to Kevin Owens, it's leading to Seth or Roman. I feel like we've seen it. It wasn't, you know, this Seth beat him at WrestleMania thing I really liked. But yeah, the problem is the end game is not what MD wants, and I think that's why people are quite rightly just kind of bored, because there's nowhere for them to get excited about where the journey's going to go.
Yeah, I mean, you know, as you said at the end of, was it season one of Glow? The money is in the chase. And where's the chase here? I mean, the champion chasing the challenger? That doesn't make any sense. And this should make this, I mean, how is Vince McMahon doing this? Why is this occurring? I just don't get it. And you're right, what new star is created from all this? And we had that great story with Seth Rollins and Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania. I thought that was brilliantly done. I thought it was an awesome start to the show. And now we're potentially revisiting this already? I mean, surely it's not going to be Lesnar versus Kofi Kingston. I mean, maybe it will be. Maybe long term, Lesnar will end up on Friday nights and he'll be on SmackDown. Maybe that's the plan. But it's hard for me to believe that people are really going to take a Kingston versus Lesnar match seriously. I don't think anyone really is going to believe that Kofi's got any chance of defeating Lesnar. It doesn't really feel like, you know, blockbuster match to me. No new stars are created in this. Lesnar could have come back anywhere and demanded a title match. There's lots of ways that he could have been put in a position where he was going to be challenging one or two champions without giving him the Money in the Bank briefcase. That could have gone to somebody whose career is on the ascent.
And Dolph Ziggler, obviously on SmackDown, is something else. Dolph Ziggler on SmackDown now going to be facing off against Kofi Kingston at Super Showdown. Part of the reason for that is because Kevin Owens is refusing to go to Saudi Arabia along with Daniel Bryan and Sami Zayn. What do you make of Ziggler being in this spot and them refusing to go?
Well, presumably that was the reason why the Kofi Kingston versus Kevin Owens feud just felt like it was blown off at Money in the Bank. It just felt like Kofi's pin, it just felt that's it, it's over. And just one thing about Money in the Bank, I thought AJ Styles and Seth Rollins were tremendous. I thought they had a hell of a match, considering the hype for their match was not really that appealing. I thought they over-delivered on the night. Super smooth, super professional matchup. And I just felt like after that match, people were ready for the Money in the Bank contract match, the men's Money in the Bank ladder match. And that was it. They didn't want to see anything else. So Kingston and Owens just could not follow it. So presumably that's why it was blown off at Money in the Bank, because Owens has said, I'm not going to Saudi Arabia. So it's like we're in this position, Kenny, where they just don't have stars. They don't really have ready-made, credible opponents who could just step into the breach and take on Kingston. It's been going on for years. And until they give people a chance to become stars and create long-term storylines with a start, middle and end that are designed to get people over as stars and future challengers, they're going to be in this position where they have to bring people like Dolph Ziggler back. I mean, his attack on Kofi Kingston went on and on and on. It was like he had to beg for people to boo him. It was only when he wrapped a chair around Kingston's head and then stomped it and threw him into, I think, was it an announce desk? And then he did a stretcher job. I mean, after all that, it was just like, even then people were only booing him. It was only like, I mean, the heat was still only really lukewarm after all that. And it just was just sort of indicative of how little interest people have in this match. So I'm, you know, to me, it's just a sign, another sign of the times. That's what it is.
So the other thing I was going to ask you about was with the whole idea of, you know, Kevin Owens and Daniel Bryan and Sami Zayn not going to Saudi Arabia, do you think that more guys are going to start to say they don't want to go? And what do you make of the, you know, they put this Goldberg and Undertaker match together, this kind of dream match. How do you think this is going to go long term? Do you think we're going to see more people pulling out, or do you think it's just going to be these kind of few that are just going to not do it, and they're going to have to just bring other people in to try and fill these spots?
I don't think they're going to have a problem filling the spots because there's so much money available. I mean, let's face, I don't know how much Goldberg's getting paid, but it's got to be a lot for him to have come out of retirement after more than 2 years. So, I mean, there's so much money to play with here that they're not going to have a problem filling out these cards. No problem at all. I don't know. I have no idea who else will refuse to go. I really couldn't tell you. But, I mean, aren't they promoting, is it a 50-man battle royal on the show, Kenny?
Yeah, 50-man battle royal. And I think they're also going to have, I mean, the rumours are we might see Lesnar and Seth on that card as well.
Okay. So, I mean, they've got a lot of talent who are still willing to go. They're not going to have a problem filling out the ranks to book these shows. No problem at all.
So we should also bring up the newest WWE title, the 24/7 Championship. It went down like a fart in a church when Mick Foley had to announce it. But it has provided a lot of content that is kind of dividing opinions. Some people are really enjoying the wacky programming that we're getting with it, you know, with Matt Hardy waiting outside the venue for R-Truth, and Robert Roode being in a trunk, and all that. Like all this stuff that's been happening, all these kind of crazy angles. What do you make of it? What do you think? I mean, obviously, we know WWE doesn't need more titles. We know that. I mean, everybody would agree on that. But it is providing some interesting programming for some people where there's characters we don't usually get to see that are being featured. What do you think of it so far?
Well, they're not really being featured, are they? They're just running around backstage. Like, well,
but like, you know, for example, Matt Hardy. Matt Hardy is getting to do some woken stuff and getting to just use his personality rather than being trotted out as the Hardy Boys again. You know, so I feel like the weird thing is there is a bigger divide with us than I thought, because I thought everybody was just going to be like, well, 24/7 title, you know, ridiculous. But some people aren't enjoying it. It feels like the reception is about 50-50. In terms of people that are enjoying it and who aren't. Do you think it's something? Is it a good thing? I guess I'm trying to ask for talent who don't get used all the time on the shows.
Well, I mean, we've been watching long enough that we remember the hardcore title, which was defended under the 24/7 rule. I mean, for some reason, I decided to watch the famous scene where Crash Holly is at the airport and the Mean Street Posse attack him, and then he escapes on the baggage conveyor belt. And I mean, I just thought that was something that felt genuinely original at the time. I think that was from early 2000. So, I mean, it was like a comedy title then. And this is just a recreation of that. I mean, Mick Foley said, in my humble opinion, there's been something missing from Monday Night Raw. And that almost felt like, yeah, there's been lots of things missing from Monday Night Raw recently, Mick, but not another title. You know, why not feature the titles they've already got in meaningful scenarios and build them into titles that matter? And if the titles matter, then the people vying for them will matter as well. This 24/7 title that they've created for presumably the last hour of Raw, I think that was something that Foley said, but I mean, that'll probably change. It's just, to me, it's just an unimaginative way of booking EC3, Titus O'Neil, Heath Slater, Robert Roode, R-Truth, and all these people who don't normally, who aren't normally booked in any sort of storylines because they're not considered to be worthy of a storyline on Raw. It's like just an excuse to get them on the program without really having to put any imagination or effort in. So, I mean, as a bit of fun, okay, it's all right. But, I mean, there's a lot more. I think WWE could do something far more valuable with this TV time. Example being Revival versus the Usos, which took place earlier on Raw before Mick announced the introduction of the 24/7 title. Now, there was no heat for this match when it started, and they insisted on showing us the back shaving and pants on fire angles again. You know, presumably because they don't like us, Kenny. Presumably to stick it to us. Now, Revival and Usos, this match was cold when it started, but it was good enough that fans got into it, and we even got a This Is Awesome chant. Now, that's not a chant I normally welcome, but because we don't hear it that often on Raw, it was actually quite refreshing. And also because it came in a match between four guys that got over based on the standard of their work. Yeah, on this occasion, good on you, fans. Revival scored a win. So, I mean, this actually felt like a moment for the Revival. You know, I'm not saying we can forgive or excuse the things that they had to go through in order to reach this point, because of course we can't, but it still felt like something for the Revival, and it was a match that mattered. So to me, Kenny, the wrestling is, in order for things to matter, the wrestling has to be good. It has to be serious to some extent. So I would rather see WWE build up the titles it's got. I mean, Curt Hawkins and Zack Ryder, where are they? I mean, they're the Raw Tag Team Champions, last I checked. Are they still Raw Tag Team Champions, Kenny?
They are, yeah. I don't know where they are. I mean, look, I think everything you're saying is totally valid. I mean, it's 100% valid. I do enjoy the fun aspects of the 24/7 title. I mean, it does kind of appeal to that part. I mean, like the stuff that you mentioned, the stuff that they did in 2000 with Crash Holly, and they would have, like, I think it was, like, was it Ivory was giving Crash Holly a massage at one point, and she hit him with a vase over the head and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, if it's leading to stuff like that for kind of characters that we don't see a lot, I feel like it will break up the show a little bit because the show has become so overly produced and kind of mundane. But there's no reason that they can't do this and exactly what you said.
Oh,
there's,
yeah.
There's no reason they shouldn't be able to do both.
Yeah, as a bit of fun, it's fine. But to me, it cannot be something that's going to prop the show up. To me, it's like a little buffer here. It's a bit of filler here and there.
So it could be side salad to your main meal.
It's what, sorry?
It's a little side salad to your main meal. It's not your dinner.
Exactly. It's a little buff. It's a little bit of filler to put between to lighten the mood. So I've got no objection to it per se. But if it's going to suck up a lot of TV time each week, then I absolutely do, because it can only ever be a comedy thing. It's not really going to be a ticket seller. It's not going to be a ratings grabber. It's not going to be a star maker. And that's what WWE needs right now, Kenny. It needs to build stars. It desperately needs to do that.
Well, one of the reasons it does need to do that is because there is a big card coming up this Saturday night in Las Vegas. I'm actually at the hotel in Manchester right now at the airport because I'm flying out in the morning. So I thought I'd just ask you a couple of the bigger matches and just what you kind of envision happening or what you think the kind of outcome would be. One we should bring up is obviously what there was going to be Hangman Page versus Pac on the show. That didn't happen. They did the match in the UK last weekend. You know, lots of stories going out about, you know, creative differences, something that it's maybe something else.
Maybe it is something else, Kenny.
Maybe it is indeed. Maybe yes. It is. Regardless of that, I think AEW were put in a tough spot here, and I think that you know, they've said, like, the Young Bucks, I think it was the Young Bucks, I don't want to attribute it directly to a person, but somebody within AEW did an interview in the last couple of days where they said that they have a better idea now that's going to basically replace that. So I don't know what that is or who that is, but you know, for Hangman Page, he's a guy that's not really fully formed yet as a star.
Yeah.
And I feel like this was a night where he was going to get it. So I hope they have something for him that, you know, because it's a shame for him in the sense that this was going to be a big night for him. he was going to face off against Pac. It was going to be a big, you know, night of his career. And if Pac's not there, maybe they have something else. But any thoughts on who they might get in instead?
I mean, I'm not sure. I mean, there's a lot of people out there. You would think that they're going to be eager to really make good on this one. To make sure it is something that people are like, wow, that is better. You know, I mean, I was wondering, Kenny, do you think Savio Vega could be available?
Oh, fuck off. Savio fucking Vega. I'm sitting here with Corona, do the 100th episode, you have to put that prick in my head. Can you imagine? Can you imagine?
That would actually be a great sort of like a double inside joke, like an inside joke on top of an inside joke, wouldn't it?
It would. It'd be like Inception. The movie Inception for wrestling.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, people are mentioning Dean Ambrose, but it doesn't really feel like something. You don't really feel like they could waste Dean. I know they're saying, well, yeah, Hangman Page is going to be a big star and all this kind of thing, but I wouldn't have thought they're going to bring Dean Ambrose in for that. I wouldn't have thought so. But I mean, no.
Well, I'm just going to ask you about the top three matches and just give me, your kind of thoughts on who you think might win. Any thoughts on the match? So obviously, the three most promoted matches: Cody and Dustin. Big match, Dustin, one last ride, or is it? Cody wants to kill the Attitude Era. They've done a pretty good job building it up. What do you expect from this match?
Well, I mean, Cody won it all in. He had the big euphoric victory there. With this being the start of something, I mean, maybe they could put Dustin over because that could then lead to a rematch. I mean, we're in a position now with Double or Nothing, where it's not a self-contained one-night show with a start, middle, and an end. This is the start. So where could it lead? I mean, common sense sort of dictates that Cody should go over because Dustin is pretty much at the end of his career and isn't going to do a whole lot more. And it's hard to believe they're going to do too many screwy finishes on the show, especially in the big matches. I get the impression that they're going to try and avoid that. Is that what you've heard as well, Kenny?
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing about the match with Pac and Hangman Page, as an example, was that, you know, that what they would have had to do, theoretically, was...
Theoretically,
what they were supposed to do, what they would have had to do, because, you know, it is definitely creative differences, 100%.
Oh, absolutely.
But, you know, you cannot... They're a promotion who is coming in and they want to be the alternative, right? So what they need to do on that first show is it needs to be a big show that people walk away going, I want more of that. Yeah. And I am in agreement that you cannot do a draw or anything like that. I think they've built this, you know, this is a match where these two guys for years have wanted to have it. On a WrestleMania or whatever, I think that it's a really strong... From a marketing perspective, it looks really strong. You've got Cody, who's built his persona up. You know, actually today, as we record this, May 22nd, or maybe was it yesterday? Cody quit the WWE 3 years ago, either yesterday or today. And look what he's done in 3 years for himself, you know? And then Dustin has taken a last chance on himself. You know, he feels that he is more than the legend cameo Gold Dust guy anymore, and yeah, that's a lot of pressure for both of them, but I think that they are, you know, both, they're going to be out there with a point to prove, and they're going to want to overshadow the other perceived main event matches, and that's going to be the task that they're going to have.
I mean, to me, I think Cody needs to win, because I mean, is the mileage in a rematch between these two?
I feel like Cody's going over.
Yeah, probably not.
I don't know that. I'm just, I feel that Cody's going to go over. But then, do you know what? They might have something planned. They might have, like you say, they might have a bigger story where Dustin wins the first one. I don't know, but I'm looking forward to it. I feel like if it's anything to go by the atmosphere of the oldest Cody match, which I think was the most memorable match of all in, then, you know, it should be decent.
I would agree. Yeah, it's got to be Cody. And really, I mean, I think you've then got the emotional, you know, the emotional post-match there with them hugging each other and everything. And that could be quite a moment for people. So, yeah, I think Cody's going over.
Kenny Omega, Chris Jericho, the rematch. Who do you think is going to go over in this match?
I mean, presumably Kenny Omega. But, I mean, I don't know. Maybe this is Chris's time to go over. Maybe it's Chris's turn. Because, I mean, he's there. He's not just dropping in for one night for a payday. He's here full time. I don't know, maybe they need to change this one up and give Chris the win, because he's done a lot of jobs lately, hasn't he? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's definitely the key. He's done a lot of jobs recently, so you have to kind of... Again, this also depends on, like the Cody and Dustin thing, it depends on story. Is this a one-off? Is this leading to something else? I could see Jericho getting his win back. I could see Omega getting the big win. I could see this going either way. Which, see, when you're watching a wrestling show, thinking that both people could win and you don't really know where it's going, kind of adds to your intrigue, which is a good thing.
Absolutely. It shows that you've got two stars of equal stature battling each other.
Exactly. And then the main event is the Young Bucks taking on the Lucha Brothers, Pentagon and Phoenix. You know, it's funny, I was talking to my friend Jamie Miller, and he, you know, because obviously this pay-per-view is on Saturday night in the UK, on a weekend. And I actually asked him, because he's got a son called Jude, who's 8 years old. And I said, are you gonna order Double or Nothing for Jude to watch? And he said, I think I will. Now, Jude's only ever seen WWE stuff, but I feel like the Young Bucks and the Lucha Brothers are acts that kids could get into. You know, they're flashy, they've got a lot going on. The Young Bucks, famously, when they did the All In show, you know, they'd ran out of time, so they didn't really get to do a full match. But this is maybe going to be the biggest match of their career. So I feel like these four guys are going to put on an absolute clinic of the type of wrestling that they can do together. And while that might not be everybody's, I think that it'll be a pleasing closing match for the crowd. What do you think, and who do you think is going to go over?
Well, it'll be different to the two other matches that we've just scrutinized, Kenny. And I think that's very important. All three of these matches are going to be very different. So we've seen Pentagon and Phoenix have some awesome, outstanding tour de forces against LAX. They've had really good matches against other teams in Impact Wrestling. So, I mean, if this isn't pretty damn amazing, then there's something wrong, because those guys are fabulous. I mean, they're fearless. I mean, they just are. I mean, it's like there's almost like nothing they won't do. So, Jude, if you watch the show, I hope you really enjoy it. So, and I think this match is going to deliver. And if it doesn't, then, hey, I'll be surprised. I will be stunned, in fact. So, yeah, I think this should be a hell of a match. Maybe Pentagon and Phoenix go over. Hopefully not all the members of the Elite go over like they did at All In, Kenny.
Well, like you say, it's now a promotion. You've now got things to build, so we'll see where it goes. There is also a lot of other stuff on the show. We've got the Best Friends, Chuck Taylor and Trent Barrett against Angelico and Jack Evans. Aja Kong is involved in a six-woman tag match with a lot of Japanese female wrestlers. I'm not going to butcher their names right now, but you can go and find it out. Britt Baker, Nyla Rose and Kylie Rae are having a triple threat match. SoCal Uncensored taking on Strong Hearts from the Chinese promotion OWE. And then on the pre-show we've got Kip Sabian and Sammy Guevara and the 21-man casino battle royale that includes Sonny Kiss, Brandon Cutler, Ace Romero, Sunny Days, MJF, who's been quite heavily featured, Joey Janela, Billy Gunn, Jimmy Havoc, Jungle Boy, Sean Spears, formerly Ty Dillinger, Glacier, Brian Pillman Jr. So there seems to be something for everybody. So I think they've got all the makings of putting on a good show, and we'll no doubt talk about it next week and see how it goes.
Yes, absolutely. It's an interesting show. Lots of different matches. Hopefully they'll get the match times right this time.
Indeed. So we're going to do a couple of listener questions before we go to the finale of the podcast, which is, of course, Finn talking the worst five John Cena matches that describe why he has such a visceral issue with our John, as Cilla Black would say. Okay, so
Cilla Black, where did that come from?
Well, you should say Graham. I can't do this guy's accent, but never mind. Anyway, Christopher Stevenson asked us about Pac not going to AEW. Do you book Hangman? I think I will say this. So Christopher says, with Pac not going to be AEW, how do you book Hangman open challenge? He has to be on the show and he has to do something. So I think an open challenge probably is the way it's going to go. But then you need to deliver it with someone. And someone who is not Savio Vega is my answer.
Yeah, and not John Moxley, Dean Ambrose either, because his debut for All Elite Wrestling needs to be... It shouldn't be this. It needs to be something that's built up properly. I'm not sure it's going to be. But yeah, open challenge. I like that. Hopefully they'll have a big name. I'm sure they will. Hopefully it's big enough to satisfy supporters who will be disappointed that Pac isn't there.
Okay, so Stephen Ross says, we'd like to know who Finn's personal favourite wrestlers ever are, maybe present and past, because obviously a lot of times you talk analytically about wrestling, but Stephen wants to know who your favourites are. Also, what is it that draws you to your favourites? Do you get emotionally invested in a character or person, or is it based on their in-ring work and match quality? So, good question from Stephen. I'm curious. I don't even know if I know the answer to this. Who are some of your favourites, Finn?
Believe it, back in the 90s, one of my favourites used to be Atsushi Inita, even though he was had really very little talent. I just thought there was, I don't know whether there's ever been a more charismatic wrestler ever. I don't think there's ever been a guy who's ever had such a bond with the audience that he had before he screwed it all up by breaking his retirement vow again and again and again. You know, I mean, I know I broke my retirement vow, but I only did it once.
Hey!
So, yeah, Anita was somebody who was, I was fascinated by in the, just because of just, he would, to me, he was like a Hogan type figure because of the connection. It was just incredible. As far as old timers, Harley Race, Jack Briscoe from the 70s, Terry Funk as well from that era, probably would be my favourite wrestlers from that period because they just had such an aura about them. They were the NWA World Champions. They went into the territories. They made people who were nowhere near as good as them, second raters, appear to be near world beaters. I mean, these guys were just the best wrestlers who ever lived at that point. I mean, Race, Briscoe, and definitely Terry Funk as well. I mean, what they had to go through was just, it was just, you know, I don't know how they did it. I mean, they were very well compensated, of course. These guys back in the 70s were making $250,000 a year, which was probably only Andre the Giant and Bruno were making more money than them. So it was huge money. But man, they worked for that cash. In the States, I mean, I guess really in terms of someone who in from American performers, I'm not really sure, really. I mean, I was a big fan of Bret Hart at one point. Shawn Michaels, I always thought, was very talented. Same goes for Ric Flair. I think really my probably two favourite wrestlers of the Power Slam years would have been Mazawa and Kobashi, because they were, to me, the two greatest wrestlers of the 94 to 2014 period. I mean, they were just, you know, they were just stars. And I mean, obviously no one, you couldn't say that their style was something that anyone should emulate because how it ended, obviously, for Mazawa and ended, you know, with a hell of a lot of physical problems for Kobashi as well. So it's not something that I'm advocating that any modern wrestler emulate to try and be Mizawa or Kobashi, but just in terms of how good they were and the status they had and the big match aura that they brought and just the performance level on the big shows and the heat they generated and just the believability factor, which is sadly also their downfall in terms of, you know, physical problems. But I mean, to me, those were the two greatest ever. I mean, in the ring of the 94 to 2014 period. I mean, nowadays, I don't really have favourite wrestlers anymore, if I'm honest, Kenny. And when you're doing this, when you do this for a job, it's sort of, I don't know, I think it's healthy not to have favourites. Who are your favourites, Kenny?
My favourites, I guess, over the years would be in the late 80s, early 90s, it was Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage, big Bret Hart fan in the 90s. Undertaker was a big one for me. Austin, the great Khali, obviously, for his contribution.
Savio Vega and Jinder, don't forget.
Savio Vega and Jinder, you know, all should be sent to hell. You know, but I sent more interesting hearing yours because I've talked about a lot of my favorites before, but you don't really talk about who your favorites were. So nice to hear that.
I've said it before. I mean, Steve Austin to me was the greatest all rounder ever. You know, in terms of doing everything. I mean,
he was, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he just, what, you go back to 98, 2001. I mean, it was a run that was unmatched and I don't think will ever be topped. I don't see how it can be. And Austin just brought so much to wrestling, did so much for the business. And I will personally always be tremendously thankful for what he did for the business because me as a magazine producer during that period, you know, I personally benefited from it greatly.
So let me just take kind of one or two more before we go to your seat. Okay, see, Adam Gibson got a good question. Are there any jobbers or mid-carders from the past eras or rosters that you think would be booked higher if they were around in this current WWE? For example, you know, Meat or Sean Stasiak, would he be an ICUS or 24/7 champion in 2019? Is there any jobbers or mid-carders in the past that stick out to you think would thrive in 2019?
I don't know. That's a tricky one. That is there any that stand out to you, Kenny?
I think that if he was around now, I think Test would be. Well, this is a different question. I actually think Test would have had a chance at being a world champion because I think they would have given him a shot. I don't think he would have maybe worked, but like you know, in the era where it was like 2011, 2012, where it was like there was a world champion in each show. I think yeah. Test of like 2000, 2001. I think he would have done a lot better later on because when Test was around originally, he was, you know, there was so many big names, many big stars that he did, but he had the look that Vince likes. He had the look that Vince, you know, would have usually gone for, but he was always, I felt like Test would have always been, oh, we'll go to him eventually. And then it just never happened. But I think he's one that maybe I think would have been a world champion, but I don't know if I can think of anybody who was a jobber that would have been, I mean, no, I don't. Is there anything you can think of?
Not really, no. Not really. I mean, as far as Test goes, he was somebody right. I mean, because much more was expected from him than he delivered. And was that a case of he was somebody that just had so much competition that he couldn't overcome it? Or was the talent that he displayed, was that as good as it was ever going to get? And sometimes it's very hard to know. Because you can't come along in a different era. You have your time and you've got to make the most of it while you're there. I mean, in terms of jobbers who could have been stars, I can't really think of anyone off the top of my head. So, I mean, there certainly would be mid-carders maybe who was seen as too small to really star. I mean, you go back to 99, look at Chris Jericho, Kenny, when he came into WWF, he was seen as almost like too small to be a headliner. And now he seems like quite a large guy, doesn't he?
Yeah. Everything's changed in a lot of ways. I'm trying to think of one, at least one that Adam's asked me about. Who would be from maybe like 1999 job? I think had he been around now, I bet you that Funaki would have got a fucking IC title run. At some point, like they would have just done it as a gag to annoy me.
I will actually just piggyback on that. Taka as well. He was a hell of a talent before he joined WWF in 97.
He's a good one. I think if Taka was around today, I think Taka would definitely be able to shot at being the IC champion. 100%.
Possibly. I mean, he would have done very well on 205 Live. I mean, let's face it, that division needs a.
Look at where Ali is now.
It needs an injection of personality, does that division. So, I mean, I think, yeah, Taka is somebody who could have done a lot more than he did. I mean, remember when he had that match at, was it the Canadian Stampede event against Sasuke?
Yeah.
I mean, they just absolutely tore it down there, didn't they? So, I mean, it was like, I think Sasuke was the one who was supposed to be the star, but it was actually Taka who got over more than he did. So, I mean, there was no doubt other reasons why he was offered the contract and not Sasuke, which I'm not going to go into here. But I mean, it is difficult to really come up with. I mean, everything's really dependent upon how someone's used and how someone's promoted and the circumstances at the time. And I mean, I understand the question. I understand why you're asking it, but it's a difficult question to answer because lots of it's circumstantial, isn't it?
It is, but I tell you what's not circumstantial, Finn. To finish us off.
Easy for you to say.
Easy for me to say. It is time for Finn to reveal. So Finn detests John Cena, the professional wrestler. He just doesn't, you know, he feels that John Cena has made a mockery of professional wrestling in a lot of ways. He doesn't think he's realistic in the ring, doesn't like his moveset. There's a lot of things that you don't like about him. But now you have compiled the definitive list as to why you dislike this man so much. So let's go from number 5 to 1, with 1 being, you know, the worst of the worst.
Okay, I'm going to expect you to chime in here. Right, I've omitted Cena versus Kane in the ambulance match at Elimination Chamber 2012. That was a disjointed shambles. also omitted Cena versus Baron Corbin from SummerSlam 2017. Cena mocked him throughout the match. Also omitted Cena's interminable matches with The Rock, along with a Rey Mysterio match from July 25th, 2011 on Raw, in which Cena almost did Rey in with a powerbomb. And of course, the Sheamus matches from late 2009, early 2010, in which Cena screamed out spots with reckless abandon. So I've omitted all them.
Okay, so you omitted it. Now, there's one I think we're all hoping you have in this list, but like... Right. Go ahead. Hit us with from number five down.
Here we go. Five. Cena versus Damian Sandow. Money in the Bank contract cash in Raw, October 28th, 2013. Just a senseless waste of Sandow, who prior to this match seemed like he could be a genuine star. I mean, this match could have been, Kenny, a leg up for Sandow. Instead, it was the beginning of the end of his entire wrestling career. He never recovered from this setback. Fans lost faith as well. Their hopes and dreams were dashed. Do you remember that match, Kenny?
I do. It was the beginning of the end for Sandow. You're right.
Yeah. Four, WWE Over the Limit, May 22nd, 2011. Miz versus Cena in the I Quit match.
Oh, God. Oh, I feel like my PTSD had left my body and now it's back. Oh, God. His mismatches. Oh.
Just an outrageous display of egotism by Cena. Cena took a 20-minute beating from Miz and his lieutenant. That's lieutenant, not lieutenant. I incorrectly pronounced that the other week. I apologise for that. Miz and his lieutenant, Alex Riley, they gave Cena this hell of a beating. And then Cena came back to really effortlessly vanquish Miz, barely selling a damn thing in the process. I mean, Cena just whipped him up the aisle. Oh, man, it was just awful. I watched it again today, Kenny, and it was even worse than I remembered. Now, in the match, we were led to believe that Miz had won. However, Riley had played a recording from his cell phone of Cena saying, "I quit." This was like a nod to the Rock Mankind match at Royal Rumble 1999. The referee discovered this skullduggery and restarted the match. This was when Cena just shrugged off this 20-minute pasting, destroyed Miz with his belt. Miz just ran away like a coward. And then Cena applied the, was it the STF or was it a crossface? Whatever it was, Miz screamed, "I quit." I think it was four times. Just like somebody who was like a jobber. Just terrible. Jim Ross on commentary said the abuse Cena took in this match was beyond description, and yet it had no effect at all.
I mean, I can't argue with that. The Miz matches were terrible. Terrible.
That was basically, Miz, this was like only less than 2 months on from WrestleMania, which was headlined by Miz versus Cena. Really, it was headlined by The Rock, but Miz... He was the wrestler of record in the match opposite Cena. And here he was getting treated like somebody that didn't matter, like a nobody. I mean, this was just dreadful. Three, Cena versus Mark Henry from the December 12th, 2011 Raw. Now, the reason I've chosen this is to illustrate the Cena problem, the real problem. Well, I've already illustrated quite a lot of them. During this match, Kenny, Cena overpowered Henry twice. What part of World's Strongest Man did Cena not understand? But, I mean, okay, Cena had far worse matches than this, but, I mean, that is a valid point that I wanted to make. Number two, Battleground, July 23rd, 2017. Cena versus Rusev in the flag match. Now, I mentioned this partly, Kenny, because this could have been the first match that you and I reviewed in depth on this podcast.
It might have been. It was bad. All of these are bringing back memories that I forgot that I had. And yeah, Atrocious. Yeah.
I mean, feeble and transparently phony. It was as if Cena wasn't even trying to make it look faintly convincing, even by his standards. He kept lurching from near death to fully recovered, with almost nothing in between. The gradual long-term selling, that's not Cena's bag. I mean, Cena's punches were toe-curlingly awful. I mean, when he was crawling up the aisle with the US flag, I felt like doing a giant piss on the TV screen in the manner of Sam Peckinpah during the filming of Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid. In the end, Cena powered out of Rusev's accolade submission with predictable ease, AA'd him through a table and planted the US flag for the win, as if there were any doubts over what the outcome would be.
Now, number one has to be what we all think it's going to be. In my head, I'm singing, "We are one, we are one, do 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 do." So I'm hoping that it's attached to that. What is number one, Finn?
The SummerSlam 2010 main event.
Yes!
August 15 that year. An elimination match which pits seven members of the WWE roster against the seven-man Nexus squad. The relatively new upstart faction comprising ex-NXT talent who had made such a splash when they destroyed Cena in the ring on the June 7 Raw. Hey, Kenny, we need something like this today to break the monotony of the safe, predictable format. What do you think?
I'm with you. I'm 100% with you.
When enough time has elapsed, you know, we are nearly 9 years on, that they could actually do something like this and get away with it and would be seen as shiny and revolution.
I want to say, because look, sometimes I think you're too harsh on Cena, right? There is sometimes I do think that you are. But here's my thing. Here's why John Cena annoys me sometimes. Because he has the ability to be good. That's the problem. If you're just rubbish and that's it, that's fine. The problem here was that John Cena, this was the time in his career that he had the chance to, all he had to do was let Wade Barrett win at the end, right? That was it. Let it get down. I don't have a problem with him eliminating Justin Gabriel because he's John Cena and he should. But what they had to do is that faction. I mean, I remember somebody texting me and going, "Oh my God, like you need to watch Raw. There's this thing happening. These guys from NXT have come in and they've beaten up the system." And da-da-da. And it was so exciting to see these people come in, and they had to win. And the thing with Cena is that like he in this match decided that it was more important for him to go over. And that, to me, said that he didn't really have a grasp of the... He didn't have a... If you're in... if you're in wrestling... So Cena did an appearance in the Edge and Christian podcast in late 2017.
Right.
And he was talking about wrestling and about different... And he said, to me, it's all about story. That's what gets me going in wrestling. And I'm going, well, mate, if you're all about story, then you know what the fucking ending to that match should have been. And it wasn't you going over.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the match was deeply flawed even before the ending dragged it to hell. You know, I mean, Bret Hart was in it. He couldn't take punishment due to the lawsuit settlement. Nexus members, Heath Slater, Skip Sheffield and David Otunga. I mean, they looked pretty mediocre at the time. Chris Jericho and Edge, they were eliminated in unconvincing fashion, it has to be said. I mean, we should note that Daniel Bryan returned here on Team WWE to face his former Nexus comrades. And Bryan was the best thing in this match by far. I mean, really, I mean, the worst, of course, you know, was Cena because of the way it ended, you know, and he stumbled and bumbled about, you know, but really, it's all about the end. It was Cena remaining on the WWE side and Wade Barrett and Justin Gabriel on Team Nexus. Cena was nailed with a DDT on the concrete floor by Barrett. They had removed the mats. 71 seconds later, Cena was in the ring. Gabriel flew through the air. Cena moved. Cena pinned Gabriel. So 71 seconds after he took the DDT on the concrete, he pinned Gabriel. 27 seconds after that, Cena forced Barrett to tap out to the STF. Cena sold nothing. I mean, it was just a disaster for the Nexus. It really was.
They never recovered.
They never really recovered, no. I mean, Cena was actually linked with them later in the year. He had to become a member reluctantly. And he kind of kept them on life support for a little bit before he then destroyed Wade Barrett. And I believe it was a chairs match at TLC at the end of the year. Yeah, I mean, it was really bad. I just want to give Cena props for, obviously, I mentioned it before, the Umaga match at Royal Rumble 2007. My favourite ever seen a performance, really giving performance, sold loads, made Yamaga look like a killer. It was one of the few matches Cena's had in his entire career where he won and yet put his opponent over even though he defeated him.
I also think he deserves a shout out for the 2015 United States Championship Open Challenge that he did for a while. I thought they were performances where, like, on a week-to-week basis, even though he was champion, like, I enjoyed what he did for a good few months. He even put over Kevin Owens at that point. There was some light at that point.
I mean...
After the debacle of Rusev and Bray Wyatt.
Yeah. I want to also compliment him for the match with Lesnar, Extreme Rules 2012. I mean, even though Cena went over, I mean, which made no sense when you think about it. I mean, Lesnar was over enough that he could take the loss. And he did retain his star status, even though he was defeated by Cena in his comeback match. But, I mean, the Lesnar match, Extreme Rules, was full-on, brutal, really exciting performance. Also want to give Cena credit for his match with Daniel Bryan at SummerSlam 2013. I thought that was a good performance as well. You know, Cena went into it with the triceps injury, I believe it was?
Yeah.
So, and I thought that was a really good match. I thought it was very different to the usual Cena match. You can tell that Bryan was the guy who laid it out and basically decided what they were going to do. But I enjoyed that as well. But yeah, the Umaga match, without doubt, his best performance ever. Even though people would say, oh, no, he was much better years later. You go back and watch that match with Umaga. And he put that guy over, even though he beat him.
Let me ask you one last Cena-related question before we go, because one of our listeners, Callum Hogan, Cena is his favourite, and he did have this question for you, so I want to ask it, so be kind. He says, so with Cena, he says sadly, but I'm sure for you it's gleefully, so with Cena sadly moving to Hollywood, do you think he will get a big send-off? Will he wrestle again or whatever? And if so, then against who? Callum's dream match was The Undertaker, but obviously that didn't really pan out. He would love to see him against Johnny Gargano, just so Cena could show his talent. But so the question to you:
Cena versus Johnny Gargano? Are you kidding? Are you off your rocker? How's that match gonna work?
Well, I'm gonna ask you though: if Cena was gonna have a sort of like farewell match, right, and he's gonna put somebody over, who would you want to see Cena face if he had to do one last one?
I don't know, I'm the last person that you should be asking this question, but not not Johnny Gargano. I mean, the size difference is ridiculous. I mean, I don't really care who he wrestles. I think he will get a send-off. I think he'll get the Hall of Fame induction, if not next year, the year after. He's going to be... Has he joined the cast of The Fast and the Furious, Kenny? I believe he has, hasn't he?
He has. He's joined the Fast and the Furious.
I've never seen it. I've tried to watch one of those movies, and I tapped out after, I think it was about 12, 15 minutes. I was just like, I can't watch this anymore. That's all I've seen of all those films.
Well, you gave it a good college try.
Yeah, I mean, there was a scene where Rock was interrogating somebody, or Rock's character was interrogating somebody, and he started beating him up and then bounced him off the ceiling. And I just thought, this is the dumbest thing I've ever seen. I just had to turn it off. So, I mean, I think that Cena will... I think he'll get a good send-off, absolutely.
I thought you were going to say, you know, the guy get bounced off the ceiling, the dumbest thing I've ever seen. Cena will thrive in that franchise.
Well, he will do, won't he? I mean, I don't really know much about those films other than they've been extremely successful. I did see a trailer for the one... Is it Hobbs and Shaw? Is that the one that's coming out next?
Yeah. Hobbs and Shaw.
I saw a trailer for that, and there's something happening where they're flying through the air and Rock's, I think, actually holding up a car with one arm or something.
He was funny in Daddy's Home. You liked him in that?
Oh, yeah, he was good in that. Yeah, he was good in Daddy's Home. Yeah, the first one especially, because he's only in it very briefly. And I've got to say, you know, Mark Wahlberg did you see him put Cena over? I mean, it was just, what a moment that was. Mark Wahlberg, the established actor, the movie star, the big deal, he sells for the newcomer, sells for the guy who's the rising star. You see where I'm going with this, Kenny?
I think you've done well. I'm going. Do you know what? I want to thank you though, because you delivered tenfold with that list. My favourite bit is when you almost wanted to piss on a television. It was my favourite bit. But can I finish off with just two very quick things that I want to say?
Please do. And can I just apologise to Callum? I don't really think you're off your rocker.
Lies.
But that match isn't going to work.
I want to say this to Finn. I don't want to be too soppy about it, but the last couple of months have been really difficult for me with the Undertaker thing and all that kind of stuff. And I've tried to look at positives. And one of the positives I have is the person that got me to be as smart a wrestling fan as I was able to be and got me to this job was Finn, because his magazine was so amazing. And it was my Bible every month. And now I get to podcast with him every week. We've become friends. And this is like the 100th episode. So for me, in the kind of Undertaker dark days of like all this stuff, I was like, I got to basically work with my mentor in wrestling and still do. And to me, that's a really great thing. So Finn, thank you very much for joining Inside the Ropes and sort of taking a plunge with us. And I hope that we have another 100 in us.
I'm sure we have, Kenny. We're just getting started. And by the way, Kenny, I mentioned this to you before, and this is not going to happen for many decades to come, I know, but I've decided that at my funeral stroke cremation, you're going to read my eulogy. I've decided that you're the man for the job. The only slight problem there is that in the time-honored tradition of the business, we'll probably fall out before then. Hopefully that won't happen.
Well, no, we can fall out, write the books, then fall back in before you die.
Oh, exactly. That's the time on the tradition of the business.
And the other thing I want to say, to keep it on a high note here as well, and I want you to talk a little bit about this as we go off air. I just saw it come up there. It is 3 years ago today, May 22nd, 2016, where Cody Rhodes left WWE. And if there's ever a sort of like thing in wrestling to look at somebody taking a chance on themselves, betting on themselves, he took that risk and look where it got for him. So I think that that's a great sign that no matter what, where you are in wrestling or what you're doing, that there is hope and that you can do better. And off the back of that, Matt Hardy tweeted out today, and I kind of went back and forth with him a little bit. He was talking about wrestling fans, and he said that's another, a very good thing to close us out with, is a benefit for a wrestler in 2019 is that an ever-growing audience is intelligent to the process. That audience recognizes and respects real passion and talent. They understand utilization. They've pushed the business forward and will always still adopt a true talent that's been abused. So I think that's like a nice couple of things to send us off on, right? With 100 episodes, yeah. Is that Cody Rhodes took a chance on himself, look where it is, and who knows who could do that and become a big star in the future.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. People have just got to be given a chance to become stars. And if the company you're in isn't giving you a chance, then maybe you should go to a company that will.
So Finn, give us your plugs. How can people buy your glorious books? You know, did you know that Finn once interviewed the Honky Tonk Man? He talks about it at length for about 17 minutes on episode 91.
That was after I said I wasn't going to talk about it as well.
Of course. No, but what are your plugs? Because you've got the ebooks that Pro Wrestling to the
Power. That's another time on the tradition of the business, isn't it? Saying you're not going to do something and then doing it. My website's finleymartin.co.uk, as people know. And my Twitter is @FinleyMartin. And what are your plugs, Kenny?
You can get me at KennyMC1985 or Inside_the Ropes on Twitter, patreon.com/InsideTheRopes as well for bonus content, articles from Finn, all this different cool stuff, and youtube.com/InsideTheRopes for bonus content, interview clips with Cody, Dustin Rhodes, and I'm going to be in Vegas this weekend. We're going to have bonus clips from there as well. Tons of stuff coming up, so please do join us, as Cultaholic would say. So Finn, 100 episodes done, 100 more to do, minimum.
Definitely, yeah. So, yeah, look forward to next week, and yeah, have a good trip in Vegas, Kenny.
Yeah, we will talk more about that next week. Thank you for everybody supporting us. I know a lot of you who say this is your favourite podcast of Inside the Ropes is the Power Slam with Finn and I, and I enjoy it just as much as you guys do listening to it. So thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you soon. If I be tonight, if I'm sad tonight.